Alrighty, Shabbat Shalom. And today I have a message called Why Yahweh Sends His Servants to the Wilderness. So, wow, it's amazing how fast the year is going. But back at Passover, or right after Passover, I had sent a letter out sharing my conviction that Yahweh is leading now us into a new direction to the wilderness. I'm not going to get into all the reasons why with Jerusalem and all those things. I did that in the other message. But what I really want to talk today about is why Yahweh sends his servants to the wilderness. Before, the reason why I've been holding off, I've been putting these sermons together. I got a lot of sermons. I'm not going to give them all at the same time. I'll go back and forth. Some I'll give at Sukkot. But I wanted to make sure that the brethren were spiritually ready to have a wilderness mindset and to realize that the wilderness is a physical place as well as a mindset. So that's why I've been giving some of the other sermons on coming out of the world and this and that, because as long as you're living in the facade of Babylon, and maybe you'll see this by this message today, and when I say that, I mean all over the world, the facade of this reality TV show, you know, that Satan has called the Earth. As long as you're living in that, you'll never have a wilderness mindset, because the wilderness is really a preparation. It's getting rid of, changing your whole mindset of what you see as necessary in this world as we prepare for the days ahead. So many times in Scripture, Yahweh sends his servants to the wilderness to sanctify them away from the world and prepare them for their soon coming job. So that's the key. And I'm going to show you here examples that Yahweh just can't pick somebody out and say, okay, we're ready to start this. Yahweh sends his servants to the wilderness to sanctify them away from the world and prepare them for their soon coming job. So this is important. That's why it's called Why Yahweh Sends His Servants to the Wilderness. We see Moses. I'm not going to go there, but Moses in Exodus 2. Moses goes to the wilderness for 40 years, you know, in this Hollywood mentality that, you know, the world lives in today, where we tend to see life and the world through a 1 or 2 hour movie. You know, when you watch something like the Ten Commandments movie with Charlton Heston, which I think overall is a very good movie, you know. But at the same rate, when you're seeing it the way they show it, you don't realize a lot of the reality of some of the facts, such as, you know, Moses, when he left Egypt, he was 40 years old when he left Egypt. He didn't come back to take the children of Israel out until he was 80. He was 40 full years in the wilderness. And 40 is a number that Yahweh uses a lot with the wilderness, as we're going to see. 40 days, the spies were spying out the land. 40 years, the children of Israel in the wilderness. You know, Yeshua fasted for 40 days when he was in the wilderness. So 40 is a really interesting number. Won't get into that too much today, but for you to think about, maybe in another message, we'll talk about the number 40 and the wilderness. Why? But Moses was 40 years preparing for his job as a servant of Yahweh. Luke 1 in verse 76 with John the Baptist, it says, "And you, child, will be called prophet of the Most High, for you will go before the face of Yahweh to prepare his way, to give a knowledge of salvation, Yeshua, to his people by the removing of their sins, through the tender heart of mercy of our Elohim, in which the day spring from on high will visit us, to appear to those sitting in darkness and in shadow of death, to direct our feet into the way of peace. And the child grew and became strong in spirit, and he was in the wilderness until the day of his showing to Israel." So all of a sudden we just see John the Baptist popping out of the wilderness. After he's born, we never hear about his parents again. You know, we don't really know what happened. But clearly it says here, he was actually in the wilderness his whole life, until the day of his showing that was there. John 1 in verse 19, we go to the book of John, first chapter, verse 19. He says, "And this is the witness of John, when the Jews sent priests and Levites that they might ask him, 'Who are you?' And he confessed that he did not and did not deny. Yea, he acknowledged, 'I am not the Messiah,' John said very clear. And they asked him, 'What then? Are you Eliyahu?' And he said, 'I am not.' And they said, 'Are you the prophet from Deuteronomy 18? And he said, 'No.' And then they said to him, 'Who are you?' that we may give an answer to those sending us. What do you say about yourself? And look at what he says. Very interesting. He said, I am a voice crying in the wilderness. Make straight the way of Yahweh, as Isaiah the prophet said. So that's the key. Before major events, changing events, Yahweh would take his people or take his servants to the wilderness to prepare them for their job that they were going to be doing. If we go to Mark 1 and verse 9, we'll see even with Yeshua was no different. He also went to the wilderness. Mark 1 in verse 9. And it happened in those days, Yeshua came from Nazareth of Galilee and was baptized by John in the Jordan. We're going to be there soon. And going up from the water, immediately he saw the heavens being torn and the Spirit coming down as a dove upon him. And there was a voice out of the heavens, you are my son, the beloved, in whom I am well pleased. And the Spirit at once drove him into the wilderness, right? So as soon as he's baptized, the Spirit drives him into the wilderness. And he was there in the wilderness 40 days, being tempted by Satan, and was with the wild beasts, and the cherubs ministered to him. So we see even Satan was able to tempt him in the wilderness. As we'll see, the wilderness is a place for overcoming. It's a place for preparation. But it certainly is no picnic. You know, it's not a picnic. It's not an easy life. It's never meant to be that way. And that's the problem. Babylon is meant to be an easy life. Babylon is a facade where every problem in the world seems to be taken care of when it's not really the reality. So even Yeshua goes to the wilderness, and then we'll look, even the Apostle Paul, right? Because you have the 12 apostles that are trained by Yeshua himself when he's there for several years. And then the Apostle Paul, though, he came later. So what did he do? Where did Yeshua take him to? The wilderness. Galatians 1 and verse 15. It says, but when Elohim was pleased, he having separated me from my mother's belly and having called me through his grace to reveal his son in me, that I might preach him among the nations. Immediately I did not tell it to any human being, nor did I go up to Jerusalem to the apostles before me, but I went away into Arabia and returned again to Damascus. So he goes where? To Arabia. Where? To Mount Sinai. That's where Mount Sinai is, and Mount Horeb. And says, then after 3 years, I went up to Jerusalem to see Peter and remained with him 15 days. So 3 years is at least 37 months in the Hebrew calendar. Could be 40 months. It doesn't say exactly 3 years. But again, the Apostle Paul is in the wilderness training for several years there. So like I said, the wilderness is not a fleeing to protect the flesh, but a solitary place for preparation. So, you know, it's not somewhere where you're just going to protect your life. And, you know, we want to make sure we have all, you know, 10 years of food and all this other stuff and water filters. It's not a place to protect the flesh, but it's a solitary place for preparation. Yahweh took his servants to the wilderness when the world was on a cusp of extreme biblical change. And he had to train and prepare leadership to bring this change to the society around them, right? When Moses is ready, when Yahweh is ready to reveal for the first time his Torah and take a nation, he had to take Moses to the wilderness. When John the Baptist is ready to reveal the Messiah to the world for the first time, he's got to take him to the wilderness. When Yeshua is ready to bring the kingdom of Yahweh to the earth for the very first time since creation, he had to bring him to the wilderness. When the Apostle Paul is ready to bring the good news of grace, you know, that was taught to him different than any of the other apostles really understood it, he had to take him to the wilderness. So every time the world is on a cusp of major spiritual change, Yahweh has to take his servants to the wilderness to prepare physical people, because it's always physical people. Even Yeshua, the Elohim, eternal Elohim out of heaven, when he was bringing the kingdom of Yahweh to the earth, had to come as a physical human being, because that's the way that Yahweh prepared it from day one. He prepared a physical man, Ha-Adam, Adam, a human being with a human line, a human race, to bring this message to the world. And that's the way he's always done it. He did not bring it through cherubs. He did not bring it through other angelic beings, but he brought it through humans. Exodus 3 and verse 18. Exodus 3 and verse 18, because look what is the message that Moses is going to tell Pharaoh. And they shall listen to your voice, and you shall come in, you and the elders of Israel, to the king of Egypt. And you shall say to him, Yahweh, the Eloah of the Hebrews, has met me. And now please let us go for a journey of 3 days into the wilderness, and let us sacrifice to Yahweh our Elohim. So basically that's the message that's coming, you know, that Yahweh needs to take his people to the wilderness. He can't just do it, right? Why didn't he just do it there in Egypt? Why didn't he just free them in Egypt and have them live there where they were living in Goshen? They were already separated from, because there was major change. It was a new spiritual horizon that was coming. And almost every time we see this in scripture, Yahweh has to take his people to the wilderness. So here we are now. Now we're in the end of days, right? We are on the cusp of the kingdom of Yahweh for the first time ever. You know, it wasn't even there in not even like the Garden of Eden, really, although we're going back to Eden, but very different, where this will be worldwide. It won't just be like the Holy of Holies, one place in the garden, but the kingdom of Yahweh will be coming to all the earth, and Yahweh has to prepare his servants. And who are that? All the first fruits, the 144,000, all the first fruits have to go to the wilderness to prepare so they can do this. Revelation 12 and verse 6. Revelation 12 and verse 6. And the woman fled into the wilderness, the woman being the 144,000, the bride, where she had a place, it having been prepared from Elohim, that they might nourish her 1,260 days. Again, 42 months. And the two wings of a great eagle were given to the woman, that she might fly into the wilderness to her place. This is verse 14. Where she is nourished there for a time, times, and half a time from the serpent's face. So, in the end, where is the woman, the 144,000, going? She's going to the wilderness. What did I always say? I always say, find Yahweh's pattern, and the pattern doesn't change. And the pattern is, when there's a major spiritual change that's coming worldwide, that Yahweh brings his servants to the wilderness, he has to train them. That is why the congregation must go to the wilderness in the end time. Just as Moses brought the Torah to Israelite society for the very first time, remember, there were the Ten Commandments were there from creation, right? Yahweh's character in the Torah was there, but it was never in a written code. It was never in a written code the way it was from Mount Sinai. So Moses brings the Torah to Israelite society for the first time, just as John was sent to prepare for the coming of Yeshua, the eternal Son of Elohim. And Yeshua went to the wilderness to prepare to bring the kingdom of Yahweh to the earth for the very first time, right? He announced, you know, repent, for the kingdom of Yahweh is here. We need to prepare to bring the literal kingdom of Yahweh and administer it to this earth for the first time since the Garden of Eden. Do you grasp that? You know, and that's why I say, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. And when you walk out that door and you're living in this facade of Satan, you're living in Satan's world where everything is opposite of Yahweh's principles, it's so hard to grasp and understand that in a very, very, very short amount of years, and that time is in Yahweh's hand, but we're not talking about 100 or 50 or even probably 40 or 30, but we're talking about in a few years. It could be as little as 5 to 10 years, maybe 10 years from now, the kingdom of Yahweh, Yeshua's feet will be on the Mount of Olives, and he will literally be here on this earth, and the kingdom of Yahweh will be here. And we need to be ready from day one. It's not going to be a thing. If you're not ready, then you're not going to be there. Like I said, I've said this in many messages. Yeshua comes back and there's an envelope in his hand with each one of our names on it. He comes back and his reward is with him to give each according to his deeds, his works. So each of us have to be ready. And if you have no work, if you didn't prepare, then what's going to happen? There's no envelope for you. And then if there's no envelope for you, basically, you know, everything that is of the flesh is going to be burned up and only that of the spirit is going to survive. So we need to take this serious, because this is it now. The fact that now we've turned the page, the fact that Yahweh has called us to the wilderness. Yes, how many stops will we have in the wilderness? I'm not sure. I know when you look at and you equate it to the Jubilee and you equate it to Shavuot, which is a parallel of the Jubilee. What do you have? 7 sevens and then the 50th year or the 50th day. And interesting enough that the children of Israel had 42 stops in the wilderness. What does that mean? Are there seven stops left and then the promised land? And that seven could be for 7 years, the seven less years. It very well could be. But all I know is now we're going to the wilderness. Now is the time that Yahweh has turned the page, you know. We've had 20 years of witnessing of the nations coming up to Jerusalem at feast time. And now it's the time that he's taken us to the wilderness. Now it's the time he's preparing us. So we don't have a lot of time left. And I know, like I said, because it all looks normal and everything looks like yesterday and the day before to a lot of people, they can't see it. But that's what Yeshua says, even said. It will come like a thief in the night. When they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes. They'll be marrying and drinking, eating to the end. It's going to come so quick on the world. But to us, he says it's not going to come unaware. His people will know it. Why? Because he already told us now. So now we're aware. While the world is thinking it's business as normal, we are awake and we are aware and we are preparing for this. And that's why it's exciting that this is the very first Sukkot we'll be doing in the wilderness. I don't know. We might not even be there next year. Who knows? At this point, all bets are off. It's not business as usual. And who knows where Yahweh will bring each of us for a year from now. All we know is now is the beginning, now is the time, and we have to prepare. But that road will be different for each and every one of us. So Ezekiel 20 and verse 33. Let's talk now about the wilderness. Ezekiel 20 and verse 33, because here we are now. Talked about it for years, and now we're here. Ezekiel 20 and verse 33. As I live, says Adonai Yahweh, surely with a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm, with a fury poured out, I will reign over you. And I will bring you out from the peoples, and I will gather you from the lands in which you were scattered among them, with a mighty hand and with an outstretched arm, and with fury pulled out. Right? So what is this? All the Ephraimites that are all over the world, right? And we've been waiting, and our brother Judah has not, like it says in Isaiah 54, they haven't extended the border of their tents. And they're not letting the Ephraimites back into the land, even though it's our land as well, it's their land. And what is Yahweh saying? He says, don't worry, I'm going to do it for you. You don't have to knock down the doors. And all these movements that I've seen over the last 20 years of men trying to force the regathering doesn't work. Me, I've been there just waiting. I've never tried to force it. You know, there were times I thought it was happening and it wasn't, but I never tried to force it. And I've been waiting for Yahweh. Now I see he says he will do it. He says, and I will bring you into the wilderness, verse 35. I will bring you into the wilderness of the people, and I will be judging with you there face to face. Just as I was judging your fathers in the wilderness of the land of Egypt, so I will be judging you, declares Adonai Yahweh. And I will cause you to pass under the rod, right? What is that? The shepherd, he counts his sheep every night. They pass under the rod and he's counting them. What is that showing? Possession of us to Yeshua. I will cause you to pass under the rod, and I will bring you into the bond of the covenant. And I will purge from among you the rebels and the transgressors against me. And I will bring them out of the land where they reside. And they shall not enter into the land of Israel. And you will know that I am Yahweh. So maybe everybody will enter the wilderness, but not everybody will enter the promised land. And that's where Yahweh will get the rebels out, because the wilderness is not the place for rebels. It's the place to serve Yahweh, to get prepared. Revelation 20 and verse 4. Revelation 20 and verse 4. It says, and I saw thrones and they that sat on them, and judgment was given to them, and the souls of the ones having been beheaded because of the witness of Yeshua and because of the word of Yahweh, and who had not worshipped the beast or his image and had not received the mark on their forehead and their hand, and they lived and reigned with Messiah 1,000 years. And who are these? These are the ones that are martyred. And also many Laodiceans are not going to go to the wilderness. It doesn't matter what sign Yahweh shows what happens. The Laodicean, why is it? Because he's lukewarm. He has no faith. So he will never on his own step out and go to the wilderness until he's forced. And once he's forced, it's too late. You know, once he's forced, you see it every year, you know, when they have these hurricanes. The hurricanes come, right? And they're telling you, this hurricane's going to be the worst we ever had. You better get out of there. You better get out of there. And some people do. They pack up, they go. You see them riding on the road. And other people just, they don't go. Then all of a sudden the hurricane comes and it's really bad, and then they're stuck and they're waving white flags and they're trying to get help and they're trying to get out of there because they just didn't believe it. They just didn't believe it, even though it was said it's going to be Cat 5, worst hurricane we've ever had. They didn't believe it because they didn't have faith. So it's the same here, that to the Laodicean, many of them won't go. And I'm not here to try to persuade a Laodicean to get ready for the wilderness, because it won't make a difference. It won't make a difference. But to the first fruits, the people of Yahweh, they are going to prepare, because we know it. The Bible says it. And we see it here, that they're going to reign with Yeshua 1,000 years. This is the first resurrection. So this is once Yeshua returns. Blessed and holy is the one having part in the first resurrection. The second death has no authority over these, but they will be priests of Yahweh and his Messiah, and will reign with him 1,000 years. That's why I say we need to be ready from day one. Yahweh has given us gifts. He's given us a plan of action. He's given us leadership. He's given us structure. There's no reason for us not to get ready. And, you know, the cities of refuge, the kibbutzes or communities that Yahweh is starting with us, those are just a place for Yahweh to be able to hide us till his indignation, his fury passes. But by far, that is not the kingdom. That is not the end game. Just like the wilderness. The wilderness, you have to go through the wilderness to get to the promised land, but it's not the promised land. But you do have to get there first. And the key is our focus has got to be on the kingdom. It's got to be bearing fruit for the kingdom. And it's got to be working for Yahweh into our last breath. So, first fruits have to be ready to serve from day one due to the wilderness experience. So, the wilderness, without the wilderness, you will not be prepared. You will not be ready. Hosea 2 and verse 14 says, therefore, behold, I will lure her and bring her to the wilderness and speak to her heart, right? So didn't we just read that in Ezekiel 20? What does Yahweh say? I will take you out, even with fury if he has to, and he will bring us to the wilderness. Therefore, behold, I will lure her, Hosea 2:14, and bring her to the wilderness and speak to her heart. And from there, I will give her vineyards to her and the valley of Achor for a door of hope. And she shall answer there as in the days of her youth, as in the day when she came up out of the land of Egypt, right? The parallel. And at that day, says Yahweh, you shall call me my husband, and you shall no more call me my Baal. So very interesting. What does he mean by this? You know, here it is. This is Yeshua talking about the bride going to the wilderness. And what does he say? He's going to lure her to the wilderness and speak to her heart, because he's got to prepare her. But it's really interesting, because the word Baal literally means master. But he says, you will call me my husband, literally my ish, my man. You will call me my man, my ish, and not my Baal, not my master. Showing when Yeshua comes and the wedding supper comes and we're going to be the bride of Messiah, there's an equality there. He's not coming as a master. He's coming as a husband. He's coming, and it's really a beautiful scripture here. But first, you got to go to the wilderness. That's what he says. First, he's got to lure us to the wilderness. Song of Solomon, we went over this for a couple of months. Wonderful book we have online. If anybody is hearing this for the first time and doesn't know that, you can go there and listen. But Song of Solomon, look what he says. Song of Solomon 3:6. Who is this who comes out of the wilderness like columns of smoke, sacrificing his incense, myrrh, and frankincense from the powders of the merchants, right? And was it myrrh and frankincense, the very gifts that were given to Yeshua at his birth, and the very things that are used at his death? So, but here it is. The woman is coming out of the wilderness. She's coming out of the wilderness. So she's coming out of it, meaning she's ready. But she didn't go into the wilderness ready. Go back to Song of Solomon 1 in verse 5. Look what the bride says as she's going into the wilderness. She says, I am black but comely, O daughters of Jerusalem, like the tents of Kedar, like the curtains of Solomon, right? She's not ready. She's defiled. She's not doing exactly what she should be doing. Look at verse 6. Do not look at me that I am black, that the sun has looked on me. My mother's sons were angry with me. They made me the keeper of the vineyard, but my own vineyard I have not kept, right? And what does Yeshua said? He equates our work to a vineyard, like Isaiah, the 5th chapter. And she's saying, they made me the keeper of the vineyard, but my own vineyard I did not kept. So at first, maybe she's out there working in Babylon, working for somebody else, working, doing something, making somebody else rich and bearing fruit for somebody, but certainly not her own fruit for Yahweh. And then it says, tell me, You whom my soul loves, where do you feed? Where do you lie down at noon? Why should I be as one who is veiled beside the flocks of your companions? So, like I say, the woman comes into the wilderness. Now, granted, she's willing. She's willing to come into the wilderness because she knows there's no other way to get ready to be the bride. But she comes in. So we don't have to worry to say, you know what? I'm not ready. I'm not perfect. Of course not, because that's what the wilderness is for. The wilderness is to prepare us for the bride of Messiah. And the same way is, you know, I hope this is the way it is with you. I know it is with me. I'm not the same person I was 10 years ago. I'm not the same person I was 5 years ago. I'm not the same person I was even 6 months ago. Because as Yahweh's Spirit is filling us, we should be changing. We should be getting closer to Him. We should be growing in the fruits of the Spirit. And this is what happens. But I know I'm not ready for the kingdom yet. I know I need the wilderness. So the bride comes out of the wilderness ready, but she goes in not. One more scripture in Song of Solomon 4. And look how she comes out of the wilderness. Look at what Yeshua is saying to His bride when she comes out. Behold, you are beautiful, my love. Behold, you are beautiful. Your eyes are as doves from behind your veil, right? What's the word for dove in Hebrew? Yonah, right? The book of Jonah. The only sign that Yeshua will show that He's the Messiah is the sign of Jonah. And here it is. Your hair is, your eyes are like doves from behind your veil. Your hair is like a flock of goats which lie down in Mount Gilead. Your teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep which come up from the washing place, of which they are all bearing twins, right? Double blessing Ephraim. And I think it's beautiful how, you know, Yeshua is romantically and functionally saying how great His bride is, and she's working. What is He using? He's using all of the terms that a shepherd can understand, of the flocks and of the sheep and the goats. So the teeth are like a flock of shorn sheep which come up from the washing place, of which they are all bearing twins, double blessing. And a bereaved one is not among them, right? They're all bearing fruit. Not one is barren. Your lips are like a cord of scarlet, and your speech is becoming, your temples are like a piece of pomegranate behind your veil, right? The pomegranate, the priestly fruit. Your neck is like the Tower of David, strong, right? No compromising. The neck is like the Tower of David, built for an armory. 1,000 bucklers hang on in all the shields of the mighty men. So it's showing that the bride is strong, she doesn't compromise, and she's a shield of defense. Your two breasts are like two fawns, twins of the gazelle, feeding among the lilies, right? Because what is she doing? She's nursing the young. She's nursing the young in the congregation. She's feeding the 25 lessons of Yeshua's doctrine is what she's doing. Until when the day blows and the shadows flee away, I myself will go to the mountain of myrrh and to the hills of frankincense, just like we just read, right? You are all beautiful, my love. There is no blemish in you. Wow. So the bride goes in with blemish, but because she's willing to surrender to Yahweh, because she's willing to surrender to Yeshua, because she's willing to change, what happens? She comes out without a blemish on her. What does Yeshua say in Ephesians 5? Let's look at the same words that He talks about His bride there. Ephesians 5 in verse 22. Amazing parallel here from Ephesians, from Song of Solomon. Ephesians 5 in verse 22, look what He says. Wives, submit yourself to your own husbands as to our master. Why? Because Yeshua is really the only bridegroom. Today, our marriages are a test and a sign to see if we will be faithful to Him, but ultimately we will be married to Yeshua for eternity. Because a husband is the head of the wife, as also Messiah is the head of the congregation, He is the Savior of the body. But even as the congregation is subject to Messiah, so also the wives to their own husbands in everything. And like I said, life is a test. Husbands, love your wives, even as Messiah also loved the congregation and gave Himself up on its behalf, that He might sanctify it, cleansing it by the washing of the water of the word, that He might present it to Himself as the glorious congregation, not having stain nor wrinkle or any such things, that it be holy and without blemish. What did we just read in Song of Solomon? You are all beautiful, my love. There is no blemish in you. That it might be without stain or wrinkle or any such thing, but it may be holy and without blemish. Very, very clear. So That's what the wilderness is for. That we should be so excited at this time. And anybody who doesn't want to leave Satan's society today, as corrupt as it is, wow. All I could say is you're probably a Laodicean at best. At best, because at least some of the Laodiceans, through the horror and the persecution and the tribulation they're going to go through, will change. Praise Yahweh for that. Revelation 7, there will be many, many Laodiceans that do change in the end. But many won't too. Many won't either. But wow, we should be so happy that the wilderness is here. We should be so thankful to Yahweh that the wilderness is here. Revelation 19, verse 7. Revelation 19, verse 7. Let us rejoice and let us exalt, and we will give glory to him because the marriage of the Lamb came and his wife prepared herself. And it was given to her that she be clothed in fine linen, pure and bright, for the fine linen is the righteousness of the saints. And he said to me, write, blessed are the ones having been called to the marriage supper of the Lamb. And he said, these words of Yahweh are true, right? She does not have spot or wrinkle. She does not have spot or wrinkle. And you know, it's interesting because people that are not first fruits, that don't have understanding, they'll misinterpret when you say it's time to go to the wilderness that, oh, you mean the bottom's coming. You mean World War III is coming tomorrow. And then maybe in 6 months' time, if the world didn't end, then they'll come and say, ah, see? See, he's a false prophet. He wasn't telling the truth. I am not prophesying of end time events. What I'm doing is I'm telling the people that are convicted of Yahweh, it's the time to go to the wilderness. And a matter of fact, if you look, like I said, look at Yahweh's pattern. The wilderness, except for maybe Lot, and we're going to read that story a little later, the people fleeing are never doing it at the last minute. And the Lot plan is not a good plan to have, as we're going to see, because Lot lingered. Yahweh takes his people out like Abraham. Abraham got up and walked. Abraham got up and walked. And it was a very, very smooth transition for Abraham doing it that way. So I don't know when the bottom is going to fall. I see a lot of warning signs with Iran, with Russia, with all these things. That's not my business. That's Yahweh's business. It might happen tomorrow. It might happen 10 years from now. There's reasons for me to think that major world happenings are going to come by somewhere around the Shemitah time. But that's up to Yahweh. All I know is, though, for his people, it's time to go to the wilderness. The same way that the Assyrians left Jerusalem because it was corrupted, because the priesthood was corrupted, and they went down, and their theology, which was wrong, but they went down thinking there was 100 years the Messiah came. But they went for the next generation. And that's what hits me. Not whether they were right or wrong in their theology, but these people were so convicted that they were willing to leave society and go to the wilderness for their children and their grandchildren, knowing that Yeshua's kingdom will not come to a corrupted generation. It's that simple. So if you want to play Russian roulette and you want to stay there to the last minute in Satan's society and try to jump off, be my guest. Be my guest. Because this is not about prophecy of end time events. This is about prophecy of the bride, and it's the time to go to the wilderness. It's the time to separate from Satan's corrupted system, because the Bible says it will be like the days of Sodom and Gomorrah and the days of Noah. And wow, we are there. There's no doubt about it. You know, we are there where, I mean, it's in Sodom and Gomorrah were one place. This is countries. This is half the world or more, maybe most of the world, where open homosexuality is normal, where violence is everywhere. You know, it's the time that Yahweh is taking his people out, because we need time to change. And I can tell you, from somebody who's been out of physical America Babylon for 20 years, and I still need change, it doesn't happen overnight. So why would anybody not want to go to the wilderness? Why would anybody want to stay in Satan's society, knowing you're not going to change in Satan's society? The place where you change is the wilderness, as we just saw. That's the place you go in defiled and you come out without spot or blemish. Because you need the wilderness. We need the wilderness. So, like I said, the time is now. Matthew 10 and verse 34. Matthew 10 and verse 34. And I praise Yahweh that since the announcement I made about this back around Pesach, I can't believe that virtually every single correspondence I've had, whether it's with elders or brethren, have been 100% positive. All positive. Nobody fighting, at least not in our congregation. You know, maybe outside there's people thinking we're crazy or thinking that this or that. But within the congregation, and I say this before, I'm 35, 36 years in this faith. I have never seen a spirit of unity like I do now. And I travel to a lot of places. I'm traveling more than I've ever done. I just came back from Liberia not that long ago. And now, you know, going to continue traveling for the rest of the year, going to Europe, going back to Africa, you know, conferences that we're having. And everywhere I go, I see the spirit of unity is there. And we have to have it. We have to have it because, like I say, without the wilderness, you'll never get to the promised land. Matthew 10 and verse 34. Do not think I came to bring calm on the earth. I did not come to bring calm, but a sword, right? They always say, you know, even recently, believe it or not, with these gay parades, people have even come out and said, if Yeshua was alive today, he would be in that parade. Can you imagine what abomination that is? Because he's only love and he loves everybody. He would be there in the parade. And yet they don't look at this. Do not think I came to bring calm on the earth. I did not come to bring calm, but a sword, right? He came to bring the sword of truth, and he came to divide black and white in righteousness from unrighteousness. And you get on one side of that, and then you pay the penalty if you're on the wrong side. I came to divide a man against his father and a daughter against a mother and a bride against her mother-in-law. And the adversaries of a man will be those of his own house, right? The one loving father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And the one loving son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up his staff and follow after me is not worthy of me. The one finding his life will lose it. And the one losing his life on account of me will find it. Wow. What are you living for in this world, right? The Apostle Paul, remember what he said? If there's no resurrection, then what are we doing? You know, if all we have is reward in this miserable life, then let's eat and drink and tomorrow we may die. Wow, what a miserable life we would have. And that's why the world is so unhappy. That's why youth at record pace like we've never seen before, depression and suicide and all these things. Because in this world, there is nothing for a believer in this world. There's nothing for an unbeliever in this world, too. There is so much distortion and sickness and mental sickness and unnatural feelings of people and selfishness, just like the Apostle Paul said. I'm not going to go there. We go there so many times. 2 Timothy 3, you know, of all the things in the end time. But Yeshua said this. He said, the one finding his life will lose and the one losing his life on account of me will find it. And that's what the wilderness is for. It's there to show him life is a test. And it's there to prove that last test that he's the only thing in our life. He's first, he's last, and he's everything in between. Everything of our life is living to him. The wilderness is to get our focus only on the bridegroom, to give our full allegiance to him and to sanctify ourselves. And if we don't have the desire with our whole heart and mind and soul, then we're not worthy. So like I said, I'm not a Laodicean pastor. I'm a Philadelphian pastor. I'm here to help and give coordination and give plan of action and give vision to the Philadelphian. To the Laodicean who's not interested or doesn't believe it, that's fine. You know, there's 2 million churches out there. Go to the one that fits you like most people do. But if we don't desire this with all our heart, our mind and our soul, then we're really not worthy to be part of it. And it is actually, it is a blessing. I realized that a few years ago, the first time we went to Jordan and we got to the wilderness, coming from a background of Church of God, where they talked about this for years and years and years, but in a real scary way. And their wilderness philosophy, you stay in the world until the last minute. And then as the world is exploding with nuclear bombs, we're going to get a phone call in the middle of the night. We're all going to rush to the airport and we're going to be taking planes over to Petra in Jordan, you know, and it was scary to think this, you know, do I have to leave my family behind? Do I have to leave my children behind? What do I have to do? And everybody was scared to death of it. They were scared to death of being there and they were scared to death of being left behind. So when I went there for the first time, I had all of this Worldwide Church of God baggage in the back of my mind. I went to that wilderness and I said, wow. What on earth was I fearing? It was the most peaceful, quiet place, the place to find Yahweh, the place to seek Yahweh. And I'm thinking to myself, I should be fearing the world of Babylon, the world of Satan, not Yahweh's wilderness. And that's in the end time. This is a blessing. This is not a curse to bring you to the wilderness. The wilderness is a place to finish what Yahweh has started in you. Yahweh has started a work in us from our conception, right? And now he's going to finish that work because he's got to finish the work and solidify our mind so that when he returns, we could shed these mortal bodies and we could be glorified spirit beings with him forever. And this is the way to do it. The wilderness is the last stop for that. So this is something we should be embracing with all our heart, mind, soul, and strength. 1 John 2 and verse 15 says, "Love not the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. Because all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, is not of the Father, but is of the world." And like I said, if you compare this with Eve and the forbidden fruit that was eaten, you'll see the same thing. The three things, it was good to look at, knowledgeable to make one wise, right? The lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And it's not of the Father, but of the world. And we got to get rid of that. It is such a selfish, prideful world. But the wilderness won't be that way. And the world is passing away in its lust, but the one doing the will of Elohim abides forever. And that's why I say, to think that this creation has been here now for just about 6,000 years. I think one of the reasons why Satan tries to pawn off this lie of evolution in millions of years, you know, this rock is 30 million years old and this fossil is 400 million years old. Because once you get to that, it's really meaningless. It's just like money, right? We know what a dollar is. We know what $1,000 is. You know what $100,000 is. And even though you never have it, you can kind of concept what a million is. You know, even though they say if you put $1 million straight up on the Empire State Building, it would go from the bottom to the top. So you can kind of concept up to that. But what is $1 trillion? Once you get past that, there's no concept. Because there's no real money. Nobody has it. It doesn't really mean anything. And it's the same way here when we're looking at this concept of the kingdom compared to Satan's world. We have no reality of what the kingdom really is. All our reality is Satan's world. So with time, like in evolution, once you get past 1,000 years or maybe 10,000 years, if you get up to 1 million years, 20 million years, it doesn't mean anything. If somebody told you this rock was 1 million or 100 million, would it mean anything in your mind different? Of course not, because it's both something that your mind can't conceive. But 6,000 years we can conceive, right? The world has been here 6,000 years. And now it's the end of it. The Garden of Eden was 6,000 years ago. Just picturing your mind, Adam being there and Eve being taken out of him, this beautiful garden, Yahweh with them. And now 6,000 years later, in all the horror that's between, that you could read between your Bible and then even past your Bible in the history for the last 2,000 years, is coming to an end. And it's not going to be something that's just a feeling in our heart. It's not going to be something that we're not going to be sure if it's really here or not. No, Yeshua, the eternal creator of the world with the Father Yahweh, will physically be here. His feet will stand on the Mount of Olives and he will physically be here. There'll be no indecision. There'll be no guessing. There'll be no wondering. And now we're at the very end of that. And either you believe it or you don't. And if you don't believe it, I don't know what else you would live for. Because like I said, what other thing is there to live in this life? But that's what we're here for. And that's what the wilderness is for. It's there to solidify our faith. Numbers 9 and verse 15. Because one of the things is, in the world we're living in today, most people are living defensively. Which means you basically have no plan of action for life or spiritually. And you basically just go along with what's thrown at you. And this is why I deal with hundreds and hundreds of people every single year with counseling. And I love it. I love counseling people. If I could help and give advice, I like it. But a lot of times when I'm counseling, the problem is that people are unhappy because of what they're going through. Because everything that they're going through is defensive. You know, it's just that I lost my job, or I got sick, or this happened, or that happened. And they never plan out for anything. So, you know, you're working at a job you should have never had to begin with. And you're working there years and you know you should have got rid of it. And you never worked on it. And then when finally the hammer comes down, now there's a big problem, right? or something else in your life that's going on. You know, you're not living by the health laws. You're eating unhealthy food. You're eating a lot of sugar. You're doing all these things. And then when the, and this is what I'm saying, that the problem is people are not following the cloud. That you're living in a world that's a facade, and you're kind of just going along, not making any plan of action according to Yahweh. And then when things don't go the way you would want them to go, because they're never going to go the right way in Satan's world, then you get all frustrated and you don't know what to do. And it's time we have to start following the cloud. You got to stop being double-minded. There's people that I'll talk to and they'll counsel with them. And then they'll say something. No, I am fully convicted. Yahweh showed me. And I'll say, are you sure? Oh, yes, he showed me. This person talked to me. This person did this. I found this thing here. And then a week or two later, they'll change their mind. And somebody like that that's double-minded. Wow, when you just told me that Yahweh gave you a sign and now you're doing something that's totally opposite, you're done. You're done. I mean, we have to start being serious. And the reason why people change is, I believe in most cases, Yahweh did show them the sign. But then in the end, because that sign was inconvenient, they wanted to go the easier road. They didn't want to maybe have to go where they had to trust in Yahweh and not a paycheck. Or maybe even leave your homeland. Or maybe, I don't know what it is. It's always something different in everybody's cases. Or leave a job, you know, and not know what's going to come next. Not trusting Yahweh that it'll bring something better. But now we're at this place where if you don't follow that cloud, man, you're going to wind up falling right off that cliff. One way to the lake of fire. So let's go here now to Numbers 9 and verse 15. And on the day that the tabernacle was reared up, the cloud covered the tabernacle, even the tabernacle of the testimony. And at evening there was on the tabernacle the appearance of fire until morning. So it was always the cloud covered it and the appearance of fire by night. And whoever the cloud, and whenever the cloud was taken up over the tabernacle, then after the sons of Israel pulled up stakes. And in the place where the cloud abode, there the sons of Israel encamped. By the mouth of Yahweh, the sons of Israel pulled up stakes, and by the mouth of Yahweh they encamped. All the days that the cloud remained over the tabernacle, they remained in camp. And when the cloud tarried over the tabernacle many days, then the sons of Israel kept the charge of Yahweh and did not pull up stakes. And when the cloud was over the tabernacle many days, by the mouth of Yahweh they encamped, and by the mouth of Yahweh they pulled up stakes. And so when the cloud was there from evening until morning, when the cloud was taken up in the morning, then they pulled up stakes, whether by day or by night. When the cloud was taken up, then they pulled up stakes. Whether 2 days or a month or days, when the cloud tarried over the tabernacle to remain over it, the sons of Israel remained in camp and did not pull up stakes. And when it was lifted up, they pulled up stakes. By the mouth of Yahweh they encamped, and by the mouth of Yahweh they pulled up stakes. They kept the charge of Yahweh by the mouth of Yahweh by the hand of Moses. So really interesting here when you think about this, right? You're talking about 2 to 2.5 million people. You're not talking about a family of 5 or a family of 10 or a family of 20. You're talking about around 2.5 million people. And do you know what it takes for 2.5 million people to come? Number one, you're carrying all the things of the tabernacle, all the boards. You're carrying the Ark of the Covenant. You're carrying all the different things that you need, animals and everything else. You get to a place, right? And however long it's going to take you to set all that up, put up your tents, put up the tabernacle, set it all up, and then all of a sudden the next morning the cloud starts moving. And it's, put it all back together again. But you know what it says? Listen to this again. Whether by day or night, when the cloud was taken up, they pulled up stakes. If the cloud started moving in the night, they didn't say, oh, I guess tomorrow we're leaving. The minute they saw that cloud moving, they were following that cloud. Because you know what? You wait till morning. Who knows? Maybe there's 6 clouds there. Which one was it? Was it this one? Was it this one? Was it that one? This is the problem with many brethren today. You're not following the cloud. You're waiting. You're indecisive because you have fear. You have fear and you got to start moving in faith, because if you don't move in faith, you will never get through the wilderness, because it's not going to be an easy time. Granted, you'll be away from Satan's society. You'll be away from many influences, but read the wilderness stories. There will be trials and troubles and scorpions and snakes and all other kinds of things to trouble you in the wilderness. And the wilderness is not the promised land. It is a place to build faith in Yahweh, but Yahweh will take care of us. That is the key. You know, we must be in wilderness to hear the voice of Yahweh. No distractions. See the cloud move with it. must lay every thought, every decision before him and only move in the direction of the cloud and the will of Yahweh, not your self-will. So this is so important to understand, because in your life, that cloud moves many times. And like I said, more often than not, people don't move with the cloud. And unfortunately, I said this before, the least gift that's given is the gift of discernment. So since that, wow, counsel with me, counsel with your local elder, counsel with your circle of influence. But once you counsel, like I gave the message on giving proper judgment, you make the decision, then move ahead with it. Don't be double-minded. That's the worst thing in the world. If Yahweh's will is there and the cloud is moving, move with it. 1 Kings 19, 11 and 12. 1 Kings 19, 11 and 12. Because, like I say, one of the things in the world of Babylon today, a lot of times you can't hear that voice of Yahweh because there's so much clutter. Babylon is a world of clutter. One of the things I hate most about going to the U.S. is when I'm in the U.S., there seems to be clutter everywhere. You know, we go to a place to have a service and there's always a big TV on there with something going on 24 hours a day. There's always people coming and going. There's always, there's so much clutter that's there. How do you hear the voice of Yahweh? And here, let's look. In 1 Kings 19, in verse 11, this is when Eliyahu is fleeing from Jezebel and he's going to Yahweh and he's going to hear what Yahweh has to tell him. And he says, and he said, go out and stand on the mountain before Yahweh. This is what Yahweh tells Eliyahu. And behold, Yahweh passed by, and a great and strong wind tearing the mountain and breaking the rocks in bits before Yahweh. But Yahweh was not in the wind. And after the wind was an earthquake. But Yahweh was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake was a fire. But Yahweh was not in the fire. And after the fire came a voice, which was a small whisper, right? So here we are. It's kind of interesting because in the world today, we have hurricanes. We have fires like we've never seen before. We have tornadoes. I mean, that are causing all kinds of destruction. And they may be signs, you know, from Matthew 24 of Yahweh's kingdom. But you're not going to hear the voice of Yahweh in that. Yahweh's voice is in the small whisper. And to hear the whisper, you got to go to the wilderness. You've got to go to a solitary place. You need some place in your life. And that's why they talk about prayer closets, you know, prayer closets, because you've got to go somewhere where it's quiet. You've got to be able to go and have total quiet to hear the voice of Yahweh come in your life. You know, and that's what the wilderness is for. You're never going to hear it in the clutter of Babylon. And the sad part is that's why many people will never go to the wilderness, because all they have is the clutter of Babylon. And because of that, they're not hearing that small, still voice. And the cloud left a long time ago, so they may be looking for that cloud, but that cloud's been gone. It's been gone for a long, long time. And they're stuck there with nothing but clutter. So it's important that we have quiet to hear the small, still voice. Also that we know Yahweh will take care of us in the wilderness. In Babylon, you have this conviction, you know, that this false belief is there in Babylon of you have to take care of yourself. You know, like they tell the young girls, why they want every young girl to go to college. Because go to college, get a career, and make a lot of money because you're going to marry some jerk and he's going to leave you and you're going to be on your own. Wow, what a life. If that's all I got to look forward to in life as a young girl, what's the point of it? But that's, you got more to look forward to in life than that. You don't have to be your own provider, whether you're a male or a female, because Yahweh is our provider. And Yahweh is our provider. And yes, faith without deeds is dead. We do have to do something, you know. But what we do is we do it according to the will of Yahweh. And we take his blessing that he's going to bless us for it. So Deuteronomy 1 and verse 29. Deuteronomy 1 and verse 29 says, and I said to you, do not be terrified nor be afraid of them. Yahweh your Elohim who goes before you will fight for you according to all that he did for you in Egypt before your eyes. And in the wilderness, where you have seen how Yahweh your Elohim has borne you as a man bears his son in all the way which you have gone until you have come to this place. So Yahweh does take care of his servants in the wilderness. Deuteronomy 29, 2 through 5. Deuteronomy 29, 2 through 5. And Moses called to all Israel and said to them, you have seen that all that Yahweh did before your eyes in the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh and all his servants and all the land. Your eyes have seen the great trials, the signs, and those great miracles. Yet Yahweh has not given to you a heart to know, and eyes to see, and ears to hear until this day. And I have led you 40 years in the wilderness. Your garments have not worn out from off you, and your sandals have not worn away from your foot. It's amazing that now, this August that's just here, we are 20 years outside of Babylon. 20 years. And I still have clothes, and I still have sweaters, and I still have pants and jackets that I had when I left Babylon. You know, I don't think I have the same sandals, but I've had sandals for quite a few years now that haven't worn out yet. And it's amazing that Yahweh, and you know, we weren't buying clothes $100 a shirt or $100 a pants. We're buying our clothes in secondhand stores. We're buying our clothes in Salvation Armies. And even a very dear friend of ours from U.S. that came to the feast, I think it was back in 2005, who gave me a jacket, not an expensive jacket, but just an, you know, like a windbreaker type jacket, brown jacket. I still have that jacket. It looks brand new. You looked at it, you would think that it was just bought. And I don't know how long he had it. He might have had it for years. But this is the point of it, that if you're worried about how are we going to survive, then you're not ready for the wilderness. You know, and in the wilderness, life is pretty simple. You don't need a lot. You have your tent, you know, your food is there, and Yahweh provides it. Like he says here, you have to trust in him. Faith is the big issue. And that's why when the children of Israel, when they didn't get what they want, right? When they said, we went a couple of days without water, and we don't have meat. And they came, they were ready to string Moses, to stone him to death. Because they were used to what they had in Egypt. The same way many people are used to what they have in Babylon. They're used to what they have in Babylon. And you know what? You're probably not going to have internet in the wilderness. You're not going to have social media in the wilderness. And I say that, you know, where I've known the last couple of years that what Yahweh was doing with us over the last 20 years in Jerusalem for the feast was coming to an end. And one of the things that really, really saddened me more than anything, when we first started keeping the feast in Jerusalem at the place where we were keeping it over there, one of the things I loved more than anything was every morning you would wake up, everybody was out there because we had the whole place. It was only our group, and everybody was there in the foyer waiting for breakfast and talking and fellowshipping. And it was so great because you came there and you didn't know people. Some people became best friends just from the feast. And over the last couple of years, since they got an internet in the place, and I walk down at breakfast time, what do I see? Everybody sitting there on their idol, their little idol that people can't get rid of. They're addicted to it, and people can't admit it that they're addicted to it. But everywhere I go, in airports and airplanes, everywhere I go, I see people addicted to these little things. And unfortunately, sometimes even elders in the congregation. And in third world, I'm talking about. I'm talking about in third world, not in Babylon. That some, even elders I've seen, that can't put that stupid idol down. They can't do it. And in the wilderness, you're not going to have it. Yahweh will provide everything that we need. And that's all that we have to know. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33. 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 33 says, do not be led away. Bad communications ruin good habits. And in the time we're living in, like I said, whatever you focus on becomes most real to you. And believe me. Believe me, I could do a whole message. I think I actually did do a whole message on bad communications ruin good habits. Go back, listen to it online. So I'm not going to go into all the stories now, but let me just tell you, bad communications ruin good habits. I really, at this point in my life, I don't want any contact with people that are uncommitted, that are just trying to put doubts in your mind, and that are just selfish and out for themselves. I don't have time for it to begin with. You know, my time is so limited that I can't have time for everybody and everything, so I have to make choices. And certainly, I don't want relationships with people that are not committed to Yahweh, because they are not going to build you up. And in the wilderness, wow, we see it with the stories. I won't go there now. Exodus 16, number 16, right, with Korah and Abiram and On, when they came to Moses, right, and they roused all the people against the leadership. It only takes one or two, you know, bad communications to maybe destroy the whole flock. So this is where it's important that we make sure that people lacking faith will cause you to doubt, have frustration. They don't want to go to the wilderness because they don't want you to go to the wilderness because they don't want to go to the wilderness. Like it says, misery loves company. And there's people there that don't want to change their life. They will not. They try to act spiritual, like the Apostle Paul says, but they're filled with emptiness. They're empty air. And they won't go to the wilderness because they don't want to give up the things of Babylon. You know, and I say that as much as the time frame of people leaving America is up to them, I've never said, you must leave now. Everybody has different situations and it's up for Yahweh to choose. But the one thing that really discourages me is when I see that someone did leave, they cut all their ties, they wound up leaving. And then after X amount of time, it could be a few months or a few years, they go back there. Because once you're out of that evil, wicked system, even if you don't like where you are, there's hundreds of places in the world you can go to. Why would you ever go back to Babylon like the dog to his vomit? And you know what it's got to show you? Because you go back to what's the most familiar with you. And if you leave that system and that's where you go back to, that shows that you got to be part of it, you know? And I'm not saying going back and visit, or even in a few cases we had elders that were sent back there because we need to help the people, and I give them credit that an elder that doesn't want to be there, that will go there strictly to serve Yahweh's people. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people that have actually left Babylon and then they go back. Many of them not even in our congregation. We've met a lot of them that were outside the congregation, but wow, you look at it. But it's bad communications ruin good habits, because misery loves company, and people don't want to go to the wilderness, and they don't want you to go either. So, Numbers 20 and verse 1. Numbers 20 and verse 1. You got to separate the rebels from the king. And the sons of Israel, even the whole congregation, came into the wilderness of Zin in the first month, and the people remained in Kadesh. This is down near Aqaba in Jordan. And Miriam died there and was buried there. And there was no water for the congregation. They gathered against Moses and against Aaron. And the people contended with Moses and spoke, saying, oh, that we died when our brothers died before Yahweh. And why have you brought the assembly of Yahweh to this wilderness to die there, we and our animals? And why have you brought us up out of Egypt to bring us to this evil place? Not a place of seed, nor fig, nor vine, nor pomegranate. And there is no water to drink. And Moses and Aaron went in from the eyes of the assembly to the door of the tent of meeting and fell on their faces, and the glory of Yahweh appeared to them. Wow. Can you imagine? Yahweh brought them to the wilderness, not Moses and Aaron. And to say that this is an evil place, not with seed, nor fig, nor vine, nor pomegranate, and no water to drink. And wow. We really got to look at our attitude in the wilderness, because it's a lack of faith that it's a scary thought to think. 2.5 million people into the wilderness, and only two that were 20 years and above left the wilderness. That all of them died in the wilderness because of a lack of faith. Because of their lack of faith, like it says in Hebrews 3 and Hebrews 4, 1 and 2, that all these people perished in the wilderness. So we have to watch with the mixed multitude the same thing, because they don't have the faith to do it. Genesis 19, a little bit more here and we'll be done. Genesis 19. And this is the story now of Lot. Genesis 19. And starting in verse 15. And when the dawn arose, then the cherubs urged Lot, saying, rise up, take your wife and your two daughters who are found, lest you be consumed in the perversity of the city. And he lingered. And the men lay hold of the hand of his wife's hand and on the hand of his two daughters, Yahweh having mercy on him. And they caused him to go out, and they put him down outside the city. And it happened as they led them outside, he said, escape for your life. Do not look behind you. Do not stay in all the plain. Escape to the mountain, lest you be swept away. And Lot said to them, please, no, my master. Behold now, your servant has found grace in your sight, and you have magnified your mercy which you have done to me in saving my life, and I am not able to escape to the mountain lest some evil overtake me and I die. Please now, this city is near to flee there, and it is a little one. Please let me escape there. It is not a little thing that my soul may live. And he said to him, see, I have lifted your face also to this thing without overthrowing the city for which you have spoken. Hurry, escape, for I am not able to do anything until you have come there. So the name of the city is called Zoar. The sun had gone down on the earth, and Lot came to Zoar. And Yahweh on earth rained fire and brimstone on Sodom and Gomorrah from Yahweh out of the heavens. And he overthrew those cities and all the plain and all those living in the cities and the produce of the land. And his wife, Lot's wife, looked back with pleasure from behind, and she became a pillar of salt. So that's another thing, you know. We see, hey, when we were in Egypt, we had this. When we were in Egypt, we had this. And I see people do that sometimes with their calling. You know, I gave up a good job to be a believer. I gave up this. Wow. You think you gave up anything? You know what you gave up to become a believer? You gave up death. You gave up the death penalty because that's all you had. Because if you didn't become a believer, you would have lived your life building sin upon sin. And at the resurrection, in the white throne judgment, you'd be before the throne of Yahweh. And then you'd have to pay accountability for the penalty of those sins. So Yahweh, out of his mercy, took you out of that former life, gave you a spirit and gave you everything. And there's nothing you gave up for him. He gave up everything for you. And we can't look back. This is the time to decide. You can't serve two masters. And many people, unfortunately, have been doing this for years. But now it's really the time in the valley of decision to decide who you're going to serve. Because it is not only here, it is a great blessing for Yahweh's people. And like I said, he's got to mentally get us set before we physically go out there. But being the first feast that we're going to spend in the wilderness, it is a change of time. It is a marker that things are not business as usual, that things are different here. Isaiah 43 in verse 18. Isaiah 43 in verse 18. Isaiah 43 and verse 18. He says, do not remember former things, nor consider the things of old, right? So when you get to the wilderness, it's not going to be about, ooh, I had electricity over here. I had air conditioning over here. I had this over here. I had a refrigerator over there. Do not remember the former things, nor consider the things of old. Behold, I will do a new thing. Now it shall sprout. So in the end time, Yahweh is doing something new here. Shall you not know it? I will even make a way in the wilderness, rivers in the desert. The beast of the field shall honor me, jackals and daughters of ostriches, because I give waters in the wilderness, rivers in the desert, to give drink to my people, my chosen. Are we going to have to worry about water? No. Do we maybe go a couple of days without water? Maybe. Maybe you'll go 2 days, 3 days, maybe we'll go a week. I don't know. All I know is we don't have to worry about it. If the same Elohim who made water come out of the rock in Mount Horeb can make water come out of the rock again, and he says it. He says, the people that I formed from myself shall recount my praise. And then we will be given the praise. Then we will be sharing the stories of the miracles that Yahweh did. We must embrace this. We must allow the Holy Spirit to fill us. Change to mind a Messiah to go back to Eden. Change to the mind of Messiah to go back to Eden. The last scripture is Ezekiel 34 and verse 22. Ezekiel 34 and verse 22. And this is what our great hope is. And I will save my flock, and they will no longer be for a prey. And I will judge between lamb and lamb, right? What does he call us? Yeshua calls us his sheep. And I will raise over them one shepherd, and he shall feed them, my servant David. He will feed them, and he shall be their shepherd. And I, Yahweh Yeshua, because Yahweh the Father doesn't come till after the 1,000 years. This is during the millennium. And I, Yahweh Yeshua, will be their Elohim, and my servant David shall be a ruler among them. I, Yahweh Yeshua, have spoken. And I will cut a covenant of peace with them, and will make evil beasts cease out of the land, and they shall live in the wilderness securely and sleep in the forest. And I'll tell you another thing. You never have as much peaceful sleep as you do in the wilderness. You know, I think one of the reasons today is all the electricity wires that are around and all the routers and all this stuff and telephone really makes you, it messes up the electrons and all the stuff in the air and really doesn't make you sleep good. But in the wilderness, you really have peaceful sleep, and that's what Yeshua says here. Yahweh is freeing us from the end time spiritual Egypt and spiritual Babylon. His spirit is being poured out, and he is revealing to us the wilderness mindset. You can only get to the promised land through the wilderness. And as first fruit servants to Yeshua, we must prepare and get ready to serve in the kingdom from day one. Truly, now it's time to go to the wilderness. Yahweh bless. Shabbat shalom.